Welcome, everybody. We invite you to pull up a chair, kick off your shoes, and listen to some great sales stories. With that pilgrim on the 405, Will Crist, as he wanders the world in search of the latest techniques and technologies that will let you blaze new trails in today's new world of sales. It all starts right about now with your own personal pilgrim, Will Crist.
Well, welcome. Orange County is a wonderful place to be. As I move around and through a variety of businesses along the 405, I'm so impressed with the CEOs and business owners I meet every day. The conversations are upbeat. People are focused on what's going right in their marketplace. They have goals. They're accomplishing the goals. Of course, they're adopting their business processes to make use of new technologies. They're finding ways to be more efficient. They're certainly cost conscious. At the same time, they're looking for ways to increase revenue. Sometimes this means getting more sales from existing customers. Sometimes it means taking market share from competitors. Sometimes it means innovating and creating new products and services to meet the spoken needs of customers and prospects. Now, for thriving companies, it means all three. While CEOs are cutting costs and increasing revenue, they're also finding ways to keep their employees happy and productive. Let's face it, this has been a rough patch for all of us. Many people were laid off. Those who remained had to take on new responsibilities. This meant more work, more time, and more focus. It often meant learning new technologies and business processes to become more efficient, to be able to do all those responsibilities in a reasonable amount of time. All these things led to the potential for exhaustion, burnout, and a potential for dissatisfaction. Now that the economy is beginning to turn, there will be opportunities for people to take a look at other opportunities. Now, since they were the people who are not laid off, chances are they're your best people. Now, this is not the time to keep pressing for greater productivity. This is the time to determine what can be done to help them maintain their current productivity and to keep them happy. Remember, your best people are your competitors' most sought-after recruits. This isn't the time to overlook employee satisfaction. Rewards, compliments, thanks, and celebrations are important activities as the economy begins to turn. And let's not forget our customers. Lots of customers cut back on orders for products and services to preserve their cash. As their business picks up, they will need to replenish their parts bins. They will need to help provide the increased customer service. How will you pay attention to them? How will you stay on their radar even though they haven't purchased anything from you in a while? How will you keep them engaged or re-engage them? Now, one of the interesting pieces of the conversation that I've picked up is that for younger CEOs, the past couple of years has been a new experience. Unlike some of the other guests on the radio show who have been through two or three major downturns in the economy, younger CEOs have had a steep learning curve. The economic downturn was a new experience. For those who've survived, there have been many learnings. Responding to the changing economy has been an exercise calling for strong backbones. And many have grown from this experience. We are stronger in Orange County because of what we have learned, because of what we have eliminated, but because of what we have implemented. Now, among those young CEOs who have been involved in this learning curve are technology CEOs. And among the best is a young man I'm going to introduce now, Chris Andreozzi, CEO of Knowledge Centrix. Chris, welcome to the Pilgrim on the 405.
Thank you very much, Will.
And
thank you very much for the very wonderful introduction.
Well, tell us what Knowledge Centrix does for your customers.
Well, I always say that our customers tell us that KnowledgeCentrix cures and prevents technology headaches, you know, big ones and little ones. You know, at the end of the day, we fix, you know, broken computers and computer networks, and we help to maintain those computer networks so that our customers can focus on their core business rather than having to worry about keeping their technology working.
Well, how did you get into this business?
You know, I wish I could say that I woke up one day and wrote a phenomenal business plan and decided I wanted to be a small business owner. But for me, it happened a little differently. You know, I got started in computers really young, probably when I was about 12 years old. My dad was a steel worker. Came home one day with a computer. He said, "I don't know what these things do, but you're probably going to need them." And that's what got me started. Through college, I actually worked in a help desk at a company up in Brea, California, called AER Technologies. And, you know, got pretty deep into computers, became very technical. And then, you know, through a series of events, got the opportunity to start this business along the way.
When was KnowledgeCentrix started?
I actually founded the company in 2002. We incorporated in 2003. And once again, you know, there was no startup cash, no capital. This is really a company that was built on kind of sweat. You know, you look at us today, it's hard to believe that, you know, our first phone system, our first server was actually, you know, out of my garage. And you know, we started with myself and one employee, and I think we've been pretty successful up to this point.
How many employees do you have now?
You know, we're just under 30 people today. And, you know, the bulk of those is on the technical side, on the engineering side. You know, but we do have some salespeople and some marketing people and, you know, people in our accounting department to do the billing. But predominantly, it's an engineering company. So we got about, I think, 22 full-time engineers at this point.
Now, do you have all of your employees at one building, or are they remote?
You know, it's interesting. You know, I want to say that we have, at any given time, about 20 to 25% of our employees at our facility. And the rest of the time, people are actually in the field taking care of customers, you know. But what we like to know is that, you know, that we have kind of a hoteling model where if an employee needs a place to go during the day because he's not with a customer, he can come in. You know, our phone systems are all voice over IP, and you can kind of be anywhere and work for our company. But at the same time, you know, people always have a home here if they want to come in. And work with the rest of the team or see me personally or something. So, but predominantly, we want our engineers out, you know, working with our customers.
Now, do you find that your customers are doing more and more remote implementation?
Yeah, you know, I mean, just the way technology works today, you know, when we look at our traditional managed services business, so the concept that a small company with, you know, 20 to 60 computers can outsource their entire IT function to us, we're actually able to resolve, I'm going to say, about 85% of all reported employee computer issues remotely. So they'll call our help desk. We encourage all of our customers, allow all their employees to call us directly so that the business owner or the more senior executives don't have to get involved in day-to-day computer issues. And, you know, we'll take control of the computer. We'll troubleshoot the issue. And, you know, our goal at the end of the day is to keep our customers' employees productive. And, you know, the technology enables us to do a lot of that work remotely. You know, but when the time comes and we have to send an engineer on site, you know, we're quick to do that because the last thing we want to do is have a situation where a system or an employee becomes unproductive. So like I said, the goal is to keep everything up and running and to be very efficient in how we deliver our service. But at the same time, you know, if we've got to get in the car and drive down the street to help somebody out, you know, we're going to do it.
Tell me a little bit about why somebody would outsource their IT function.
Well, I think there's a number of different reasons. But here's a good example. Small business owners today have to operate like a big business to be competitive. And operating like a big business sometimes means having big technology. And typically in our industry, you have generalists, or what I would maybe call a jack of all trades, who works on a lot of different things, but they're not really super good at any of it. But in a small business network today, you know, you've got things like VPN services, networks, Microsoft systems infrastructure. You may have Citrix for enabling remote workers or remote applications. You can have a business application that's specific to your business. In addition to that, you're going to have end user problems, system problems, and network problems. So typically, that takes a team of people to be able to support it in the most efficient way. So it's kind of hard to hire a quarter of a person, but with our outsourcing model, we can give you specialized resources to take care of problems so they get fixed faster, better along the way. The other thing is turnover. What I see in small businesses is they may hire that jack-of-all-trades guy, but then what happens along the way is he gets smarter, he wants to advance his career. Well, maybe he outgrows that business and then he leaves. So the small business owner is faced with this concept that they're always grooming, developing, and bringing people on that may leave them. Well, our business is geared to serving those types of companies, and once again, we never want to leave. You know, we want to be there for the duration. Another thing around outsourcing is just the economies of scale around systems. So you could imagine that it's probably extremely expensive for a small business to operate a single computer room or a small data center. Well, could you imagine if they had to operate two for business continuity or disaster recovery purposes? What we've actually done is we have a common data center and a managed backup and recovery technology to where our customers share that infrastructure that's located out of state, and we literally back up all of our customers' data to that facility. In the event of a disaster, we can actually turn one or more of our customer servers on in Phoenix, Arizona, so they can continue to run the business. If they had to incur the cost of setting up that system, it's in the range of hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's so much better for them to share that system amongst multiple customers. Does that answer your question?
What I'm hearing is, you have some features that would be very costly to a business owner, and perhaps a business owner who was trying to reduce his expenses wouldn't consider having a backup of that nature. And so you're providing that security in a way that they may not be able to do that otherwise.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing I'll throw out there is that, I mean, you know, most small business owners have a backup plan where, you know, they may have some tape backups and they have their office manager changing the tapes on a daily basis. But very few of them have an actual business continuity plan. Could you imagine if a small business owner had a fire? All of their servers are gone, right? Well, how are they going to even know which of their customers owe them money to do collections? The way we've thought this out is, you know, within 24 hours, their servers can be up and running again, and they can have the framework to start building their business again. So it's the shared systems that really help small business owners. You know, here's another great point. Something as simple as procurement, you know, we're going to purchase on behalf of our customers probably a couple million dollars of equipment this year alone. When I look at the fact that I can just save people money through my procurement process and the volume of equipment that we buy on behalf of our customers, it's huge. I had one customer that was spending around $1,400 for a piece of equipment. We were actually able to get that same piece of equipment for about $1,000. Now, he's going to buy 20 or 30 of these over the next year. I mean, that is a huge savings for this guy.
So, in effect, what you're doing is helping that customer save money. I'm also hearing that you're functioning as almost like a CIO with responsibilities for strategies that many CEOs would not be thinking about. They would that's the kind of thing that a CIO would pay attention to. And it sounds to me like you're occupying a seat at the virtual executive strategy table.
You know, it's funny you say that, because one of the services that we provide as part of our managed service is called the virtual CIO. And it really is. It's the concept that, you know, we may work with, you know, 10 or 15 different manufacturing and distribution companies. And our relationships with them allow us to see some of the good things a company down the street is doing that another one of our customers may benefit from. God, we've even actually introduced some of our customers and created some symbiotic relationships along the way that were mutually beneficial between those two customers. But absolutely. I mean, what we're looking at, or we're trying to look at, is how can we make companies more efficient with technology? So, yeah, virtual CIO is something we definitely do for different customers, and I think a number of our customers find some really good benefit in it.
Well, talk to me a little bit about what kinds of things you have seen in the past couple of years, given the economy. What was your experience over the last 3 years?
Well, I can tell you that I hope to never see 2007 again. This year for us so far has been a phenomenal year. We've exceeded all expectations from a sales and marketing perspective. 2009 was a really good year for us as well. But, you know, 2007 and 2008 were rough. So as a small business owner, I'm a pretty young guy going through probably my first, economic downturn. It was definitely I don't want to say shaping, but I think it builds character. And, you know, one of the things I learned is that as a small business owner, in the good times, I get to reap a lot of rewards for that. But I also learned that in the bad times, sometimes I had to make the biggest sacrifices. And, you know, in 2007, 2008, you know, it was a tougher year on me and my family, but at the same time, we made some sacrifices to make sure that we kept our employees with us. Because at the end of the day, I mean, my employees, the technical experience they have, the fact that they know me and my business is the most important thing to me. So our number one goal through the downturn was to keep our team intact, because that's the face to our customers. So lots of sacrifices. But at the same time, you know, we were able to keep our entire base of employees together through that economic downturn, which was important to me.
Well, now, if I could speak for some of the more experienced CEOs, the ones who've been through two or three of these downturns, what I think they might say to you is, well, you will see 2007 again, or something that reminds you of 2007. Now, as you put that into your planning dossier, as you start thinking about that, what will you do differently to anticipate the next 2007 when it shows up?
Well, I think first and foremost, I'll pay more attention to what my CFO is saying, because he's been through these before, and he kind of saw the writing on the wall, and I didn't, because, you know, I was such an optimist based on our previous year's successes. At the same time, I think when times are good, we tend to allow ourselves to be less lean and mean. We tend to allow ourselves a little more softness into the company. I think as we were growing, we loosened up on our hiring process and the due diligence we did around candidates. And, you know, to myself and to my company, those are the things that I've committed to just never let happen again, regardless of the economy. So, you know, at the end of the day, I can only hope that we won't make some of the same mistakes we've made in the past. And, you know, some of that was around, you know, some of the hiring decisions that we made when things were good. And, you know, probably try not to get ahead of ourselves again. You know, like I said, we had such a huge amount of growth from 2002 to the beginning of 2007 that, you know, everything looked good. It just never looked like it could go bad. So, like I said, just when we want to stay lean and mean, we want to keep an eye on our expenses, and we want to focus on ways to increase our revenues when the economy is good or bad.
So what I'm hearing is that in the same way that you would maintain a customer's system, whether they were doing a lot of transactions or a few transactions, you would be paying attention to how that system works, that what you will do in the future is you will maintain a quality system for things like hiring and for measuring productivity and systems for looking at what possibly could go wrong. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that because so one thing that I say that we do is we manage our own technology with the exact same programs that we do with our customers. And that's everything from the help desk to the on-site services to the managed backups and recovery to network operations to the virtual CIO. I do that because I want to experience on a daily, weekly, monthly basis exactly what my customers experience. In addition to that, we're actually investing in some new systems internally that are going to allow us to be even more efficient with our use of resources, tracking of productivity, tracking of utilization, realization, and things like that. We're also making some new investments into our financial systems. So, you know, we are trying to foster this concept of continuous improvement, not just for ourselves, but for our customers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Even to the point, you know, where we actually outsource our human resources function at this point. So we're kind of eating our own dog food from that perspective. I figure if I'm going to go to companies and articulate to them that they should outsource functions that aren't core to their business, I should be doing the same thing. So our entire human resources department today is outsourced to a small company here in Orange County.
All right, so this I find very, very interesting. Because one of the five elements across all the driving companies in Orange County, one of them is leveraging the expertise of others.
And it sounds to me like that's what you're doing in your HR division.
Yeah, and Will, I actually lost you there for a second.
All right. So what I'm saying was it sounds to me like one of the five things that companies that are thriving in Orange County do is they leverage the expertise of others. And so what I'm hearing is that you're actually leveraging the expertise by outsourcing to an HR firm who's an expert.
Oh, exactly. I mean, the savings that they found me around medical benefits, the processes they've brought to bear around, you know, simple things like our employee handbook, time off policies, expense policies, vacation policies. I mean, for me to create that stuff myself is so time consuming. I mean, they have just been phenomenal as far as, you know, helping us have a world class human resources department without having to bear the cost of having a full-time human resources people on staff.
Now, maybe a month ago when I was interviewing Fred Forche from Bit Central, can I tell you a story about what he said? He does aggregation of news for ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN. He also helps television stations move from analog to digital formats and eliminating VCRs and lots of infrastructure. Now, when they originally created their aggregation software and their editing software, they delivered it from their manufacturing facility where they would build servers and then integrate that with their software, and they would ship it out. They continually looked to become world-class in their offering. And when you meet Fred, you'll understand that that's where he wants his whole company to be. And so he was certainly driving his software developers to create a world-class editing bay and a virtual aggregation system. And at the same time, he was looking to his manufacturers to become world-class in their manufacturing facility. They weren't producing that many servers. And at one point, it occurred to him that he could pick up the phone and call HP, who is certainly arguably one of the best server builders in the world. He called them,
right.
gave them the specs, asked him a price. It came back about 10% more than what he was able to create it for in his manufacturing facility. And it became very clear to him that he could become world class by outsourcing his server manufacturing, which he did. Then he said, let me give you my software and let you integrate it into the server. And HP rightfully said, that's not our core competency. You need to go down to Arrow in Phoenix. They are integrators of a world-class stature. And so now when somebody buys his solution, an order goes to HP, they build to spec, it's shipped down to Arrow in Phoenix, they integrate the software, drop ships it to the customer. Fred's sitting there with a world-class solution without having to create a world-class manufacturing and integration system. That's what I hear you doing with your HR facility.
Yeah,
What other parts of your business do you see being outsourced?
God, you know, at this point, I don't know that there's any other part of our business that we would outsource simply because we've gotten so lean and so process orientated around different functions. I mean, you know, we're doing, as an example in our finance and accounting department, I mean, we're doing all of our billing, procurement management, with a single headcount at this point. Now, I will say a lot of that, though, is because of the partnerships that we've developed with Ingram Micro, where we're, you know, as an example, we are extremely integrated to Ingram Micro from a supply chain and distribution perspective. We've invested very heavily in systems to automate the billing process. You know, I'll just give you an example. I mean, 3 years ago, it would take one person 3 to 4 days to do billing. And, you know, we've got that down to where it's literally probably 2 hours to 4 hours a month. So, mm-hmm. You know, when I look at outsourcing, it's got to be something that we're not necessarily good at or that we cannot put in a technology system to make it more efficient. Mm-hmm. I told you about some good outsourcing experiences. I can tell you about some bad outsourcing experiences. You know, okay. We tried to outsource the concept of inside sales and failed miserably. We were looking to outside companies to do demand generation for ourselves. And they just could not articulate our company's values, our business like we could. So one of the things that we've actually done, and we're going to like double down on, is the concept of bringing in and developing our own inside sales team. Mm-hmm. We're now developing a full internship program where there's a lot of talented college students out there that are looking for work. We're working with some of the local colleges where we'll have an internship program where they can come in and learn the sales process, sales methodology, and some of the different functions of our business. So, you know, if you were to ask me, you know, what I'm trying to do to increase revenue is I'm investing heavily in a sales process that works for my business and bringing in individuals into our company to execute on that sales process, including what I consider kind of I'm a pretty young guy, but I guess, even some younger individuals than myself. So.
Well, Chris, this is really interesting. Would you be able to stick around for a little while and talk a little bit more about some of these things that have just come up?
Sure.
All right. Well, let's take a short break here, and we'll be right back with Chris Andreozzi of KnowledgeCentrics.
Most sales training programs involve a 1 or 2 day seminar where some alleged expert gives what he claims are the secrets to sales. At Sandler Training, we know sales is a hard business. That's why we employ continual reinforcement with ongoing training and individual coaching to ensure your success. And with over 200 training centers worldwide, you won't fail because we won't let you. Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement.
It's time for more insights from Sandler Training. Think about what you do each day. How much of your effort generates income, pay time? And how much of it only supports the generation of income, no pay time? Pay time activities include finding buyers, getting appointments, making sales calls, making referral calls, and servicing your customers. Unless pay time is consistently 90% or more of your effort, reorganize your day. Keep a cookbook and manage it hard. Plan the precise ingredients that must go into your day. Map out the specific behavior you need to reach your daily goals. Most contact management systems allow for tracking and tallying daily performance. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
Need to do more in less time? Losing valuable leads, prospects, or customer information by not following up properly? Or are you just starting a business and want to easily manage leads, prospects, customers, email, direct mail, and phone marketing campaigns all in one place easily? Then you need to call InfoWare. InfoWare offers the same solution that over 2.8 million business people have been successfully using for 20 years, Act by Sage. InfoWare has been helping businesses get their act together since 1993 with their team of Act certified consultants and business system professionals who are dedicated in helping make your business perform. Call InfoWare at 877-TECH-SOLUTIONS. That's 877-832-4765 or visit myinfoware.com today. Drop by the LA Mixer for a demo and register for a free copy of ACT to be given away every hour. Member of the BBB and authorized by Dell, Sage, Microsoft, QuickBooks, and more.
Visit us at LA's largest mixer, July 23rd at the Shrine Auditorium Expo Center. For details, log on to lamixer.com.
And now back to Will Christ and his guest.
Well, Chris, one of the things that you mentioned was interns. I think it was last week on the show we interviewed Mark Babbitt, who just in the last 2 months started a site called uturn.com, youtern.com. Have you had a chance to look at that?
I have not at this point.
Well, I encourage you. He's one of the pilgrims on the 405, and part of what we are doing with the show is when we find people who have synergies, people who have needs, and others who have ways of solving those needs, or people who can who you know can help each other either decrease costs or increase revenue. That's one of the things we put them together with. So I would encourage you to go up to U-Turn, YOUTERN.com, and you can actually fill out a form for the interns that you're looking for. You can also look through the list of available interns. Now, these are global interns. He's finding out that they're all over the world. He was anticipating, Southern California, but it's just blossomed into a worldwide flow of intern possibilities from companies and interns who are looking for opportunities. So I would encourage you to take a look at uturn.com.
Great.
Now, tell me a little more about inside sales. What you said you had a bad experience. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, once again, you know, we thought, we really tried very hard to outsource the telemarketing / inside sales function. You know, because at the end of the day, the goal is to get myself or one of our outside salespeople in front of, you know, potential customers. And, you know, one of the things that takes is it takes a lot of phone calls. It takes a lot of phone calls to get just one meeting. So our concept was theoretically we should be able to outsource that calling process to a third party. And, you know, hopefully they would have 40 to 50 to 60 people making telephone calls, and therefore we'd get economies of scale. You know, the challenge came down to just getting those outside companies to be able to articulate to a customer why they should meet with us. And you know what? We found out that, you know, nobody could do it better than ourselves. I mean, nobody can really articulate our value proposition, our capabilities, you know, our DNA to a potential customer better than our own people. So after, you know, embarrassingly enough to say it, after 3 to 4 failed attempts to outsource that function, you know, we finally built our own team, and they're doing a great job. So. And now we've got a process, a methodology, a streamlined method in our contact management systems for tracking the data, to where now it's just about scale. It's literally just bringing on more people to complete that process, you know, on a daily basis.
So you have a CRM. Is that right?
We do.
All right, so you're using this customer relation management system, and this is a way of – how do you use this CRM?
Well, I'll start out by saying that I've implemented a lot of CRM systems in my career, okay? And no matter what product you select, there has to be diligence in your organization's use of the technology. So, you know, we track – every conversation that we have with a customer, we track every single telephone call that we make outbound. We track every single time somebody calls us back, we log it in there. We track all of their pertinent information. You know, we're tracking the number of computers they have, the number of servers. And this is just on lead. This isn't even getting into the real meat of the CRM system where we're tracking customer activities. You know, we've developed a bunch of custom reports in the CRM system to show the productivity of each of the inside salespeople and the interns. So, yeah, we live and die in our CRM system.
Mm-hmm. Now, so talk to me a little bit about are your leads coming from a particular place, or is it a general list that you get? How are you generating leads for your sales process?
Well, when you look at that, I mean, I believe that it's very hard to buy a perfect list. So over the years, we've purchased lists from different sources. Most recently, we've been using Jigsaw. But I believe that great lists are built. So one of the things that our telemarketers and inside salespeople are measured on is their ability to mine and build good lists for them to call on. And I believe that it's just as important for them to quickly disqualify a company as it is to qualify a company. So we have certain characteristics that we're looking for. You know, we're typically looking for companies with more than 20 computers, more than one server, less than 250 computers, you know, less than 25 servers. Those are our good outsourced customer sizes. So when we give these inside salespeople or telemarketer the initial list, the first thing they do is they start going through there and validating the size of these organizations, the makeup of the organizations, and whether they are a good fit for our service or not. Mm-hmm. And once again, just as important it is to find out who is a good fit for the service, it's very important for them to disqualify those companies that may not be a good fit for outsourcing, at least outsourcing to our company, so that they're not wasting time calling those companies time and time and time again trying to get an appointment when we might not be able to do a good job for that company because they're just either too big for our service or too small for the service.
Mm-hmm. Good. And that works well for you, looking at disqualifying.
It does, in building the list ourselves. And I'll give you an idea. I mean, our goals for the year of 2010 were to add about a half a million in net new reoccurring revenues on our managed services side. And at the end of May, we had added about 520,000 in new revenues. So we're, you know, we've already met our 2010 goal, and, you know, like I said, we hadn't even entered the 6 month of the year yet.
Mm. Well, how do you feel about that?
I feel great, but at the same time, once again, I'm cautiously optimistic. So, you know.
Well, how do you account for that kind of revenue increase?
You know, I have to thank our existing customers because they're our best salespeople or our best advocates are our existing customers. And I can walk into anywhere and tell a company that I'm going to be the best thing since sliced bread. But when it comes from our customers, you know, people have been using our services for 5, 6, 7 years. That really helps us a lot. So I feel great about the success. But I feel that success comes from, you know, just an internal value system to our company of doing the right thing, being accountable, valuing the relationships with our customers and partners. And I think good begets good. So I think we put a lot of good stuff out into the market, out into the community, and I think that's coming back to us as a result of it.
Okay. Now, do your people have difficulty getting people on the phone?
Well, it's interesting because I admire our telemarketers and our inside salespeople because I'll be honest with you, those guys make sometimes 80 calls in a day and may get to talk to 3 people about our services. I admire them. The tenacity that they put out each and every day is amazing. And, you know, but it's a lot of hard work. And yes, it's not, you know, I don't know that anybody in the free world wakes up in the morning and says, boy, I can't wait to have a few telemarketing calls today. So it's definitely a lot of work. But I think it's important to say, though, that, I mean, I think that is just exactly what our economy needs, just good old-fashioned hard work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I often tell people that there's business out there, there's opportunity out there. Right now, we just have to work twice as hard as we did 3 years ago for the same amount of revenue or opportunity. And I think those companies that are going to succeed and thrive are the ones that are willing to work twice as hard.
If we could compare prospecting, which is what your people are doing, to an Easter egg hunt, there's still Easter eggs out there. We just have to look harder to find them, right?
Exactly.
Now, I'm curious, when your people, those three calls a day that they have a conversation, could you tell us a little bit about the flow of that conversation? What is it that you're looking for your people to do?
Well, to be honest with you, when our people are out there making those calls, what I'm really looking for them to do is to set an appointment, right? And that's all I want to do is get in front of a company, to tell them about our services and our capabilities and, you know, really look to see if we can be of value to that company from the concept of increasing efficiency, saving money, providing a better methodology around IT support, keeping their employees more productive. I can give you a great example. We have a long-term customer, great company, who we did some analysis of their spend on IT in certain areas. We found that in one particular area they were spending, we'll say between $70,000 and $85,000 a year. Our experience, we were able to take that $75,000 to $80,000 a year cost and make some changes in the network, make some changes in the systems that brought that same cost down to about $25,000 a year.
You saved them $50,000? Is that what you're saying?
We saved them about $50,000 a year annually as a result of some changes to their network, changes in some of their services and systems, and through some negotiation tactics that we used along the way through the process with some of their other vendors.
Now, that can't be a typical example, is it?
I wish it was typical all the time, but it does happen in some cases, and other cases it doesn't. So,
Well, now, does it happen often
that you're able to save a company substantial money? I would say that 30 to 40% of the time we find areas in companies where there is an extreme amount of waste when it comes to technology.
Well, if that's true, why aren't they lining up outside your door right now? If you're able to save people 30% that you could help?
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you. I'm hoping when we get done with this radio show, I'm going to walk outside and there's going to be a line out the door. So,
all right. Fair enough.
So, no, to be honest with you, I mean, it's just there are, you know, it takes openness on both sides. See, that's the challenge, is that a lot of companies don't want to just open up the Komodo and say, you know, hey, here we are, this is what we're doing, this is what we're spending on technology. When we get customers that do that with us, and we can start to look at, okay, well, how much are you spending on technology as a percentage of revenue? How much are you spending on communication services? How much are you spending on software and hardware maintenance? You know, what are your planned projects for the next 12 to 18 months? There's a lot of areas where we can be valuable to them, and a lot of areas sometimes where we can save money. Sometimes people open up the Komodo and we see that they're doing everything right, you know. But like I said, it's until you get into that kind of discovery process, it's always hard to say if, you know, we'll be able to save money or not.
So for companies to share that with you, they have to have a high degree of trust. Would that be safe to say?
Yeah, I would definitely say that's the case, and we've earned that trust with many of our existing customers today. It's something that takes time, right? But, you know, at the same time, you know, if you hired for your own business a CIO to come in and you expected him to be able to do a job for you, wouldn't you want to have that kind of trust in your CIO?
I think that would be essential.
Yeah.
And what I'm hearing that building trust is an essential part of this whole outsourcing movement, is that when people are doing telemarketing or they're doing inside sales, when they're calling on other companies, that their ability to build trust very quickly could be directly related to their ability to help that other company.
It is. I mean, it's a they have to believe, and I hope that everyone that works with us today does believe that, you know, we have their best interests at heart. And, you know, there have even been times where, you know, we've had opportunity put in front of us to sell something where we're going to make money, we're going to make a profit, we're going to increase revenues. And we've had to tell the customer, it's probably not in your best interest to do this project at this time because you're not going to get the return on it that you think you're going to get. Or, you know, they may think about doing an upgrade to a different system, and, you know, you have to tell them, no, you're not going to get the value out of that upgrade. Why don't you wait till the next version? So, you know, trust is essential in any relationship.
Well, and what I hear is that rather than pushing iron, as IBM used to say, rather than just selling products over and over or selling services, what I hear you talking about is a change in the way that we approach the customer, in that we're no longer looking at how much we can sell at this particular time. We're looking at what are the needs and the budgets and the time and resources and money that's available for this, and what kind of return do we see that is going to be available for that customer. That's a big change, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I've been, you know, the last position I had in my career working for other people was a VP of IT. And I'll be honest with you, I've never believed in technology for the sake of technology. You know, people need to buy and invest in technology because they believe that there is a real return on investment after the project is done. And, you know, I do see a lot of our competitors. I do see a lot of organizations out there that they believe, let's say that they've got they want to bring a hammer to the party every time. And that's not always the case. Sometimes you don't need a hammer for the job. You need a screwdriver. And I would tell anybody out there that's looking at, you know, using technology, buying technology, evaluating technology, is to make sure that you've got a partner that's willing to recognize when their tool isn't a fit for you.
That's interesting. So there's putting that customer first, that whole customer-centric picture of sales. Chris, this has been just fascinating. I really do appreciate you taking the time. Let me ask a question that I really enjoy hearing the answers to. If you had a megaphone and you had a minute to use that megaphone to talk to CEOs and business owners in Orange County, what would you tell them to, you know, that would help them decrease their expenses or increase their revenue, keep their employees happy and productive, or keep their customers happy? Any one of those. What would you tell them if you had a minute?
Well, if I had a minute, I believe the thing that I would encourage every CEO or every president to do is to value their employees each and every day. You know, I think at the end of the day, there's no way on earth that I could have done the things that I've done or do the things that I need to do on any given day without my team. And if your team knows that your mission is to increase revenue or decrease expenses, and your team knows that you value them, you value their individual contributions, they will help you get to your goals, but they've got to know what they are. And I believe my team knows what our goals are, and I believe they help me execute on them every day. So I would say that the most important thing is to value your people and to take care of those people. You know, I mean, last year when some companies were you know, saving money or trying to make different changes or trying to reduce salaries. I mean, we actually gave out a round of bonuses to our employees to show them how much we appreciate them. So at the end of the day, people are what makes a difference. And I would tell every president out there to value your people and your team. They're important.
Thank you. Chris, tell us how, if someone wanted to get in touch with you, where would they go? What would they do?
They can go to www.knowledgecentrics.com. That's KNOWLEDGECENTRIX.com. Or they can dial my personal telephone extension, which is 714-986-5180. And that's actually a direct number to me.
Give it to us again.
That number is 714-986-5180.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. I really do appreciate your time here. This has been fascinating, and indeed you are one of those up-and-coming younger CEOs in Orange County. Thanks so much for your contribution.
Thank you very much.
And there you have it, one of those CEOs up and coming learning through the School of Hard Knocks what a downturn looks like, feels like, smells like, maybe even tastes like, and learning from that employees are the prime asset. Keeping employees happy and productive, seeing technology as a way to help customers either decrease their expenses, increase their productivity, or even increase revenue. All these things are things that we're eager and always looking for on the Pilgrim on the 405. If you have a story to tell, or if you know a CEO that has a story to tell, I'd be delighted to hear from you. Pilgrim on the 405 is available. You can get me at WillCrist, WILLCRIST, at, here comes the hard part, WillCrist.com, or you can get me at 949-355-0316. I look forward to talking with you again next week on Pilgrim on the 405. This is Will Crist wishing you the greatest in opportunities to increase your sales, reduce your expenses, keep your employees happy and productive, and to find ways to keep your customers on board and delighted in what you're providing for them.
You've been listening to the one and only Will Crist, the official Pilgrim on the 405, only on octalkradio.net.